You're listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show, produced by The Banyan Collective. Find more mind-blowing podcasts at thebanyancollective.com and on iTunes. The Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show, adventure for your ears. All right, so we welcome to the podcast Stephanie Dawn and Rick Momsen of Climb On Maps. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. So start with how and why did you decide to take on the in-depth job of creating amazing new, and there's new technology here involved, maps for climbing areas?
Well, the short answer to that is that we got tired of getting lost on the approaches or on a walk-off for the climbs.
Yeah. I do have a challenge for you, however. Has anyone come up to you and said, you're ruining it? You're ruining the fact that I get lost every single time. That's the fun of half the fun is trying to find the crag.
Yeah. Yeah. We have. There's an easy response, which is, you know, well, don't buy the maps. You can keep getting lost.
You can leave it in the
car. That's right. We're kind of more into the climbing than the getting lost part of it. But, you know, whatever stokes your fire.
Fair
is
enough.
Cool.
Fair enough. Yeah. 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 That's funny.
Yeah. So there's you know, in the days where we were working full-time jobs, and I mean, our job currently is more than full-time, but when we had our regular employment, I would say that you have the vacation times, you've got your weekends, you go on a trip, and you go to someplace spectacular but really huge, like Joshua Tree or Red Rocks. And if you're going to go on a multi-pitch climb, for example, a really long climb, you need to get there at a certain time in order to complete the climb within the day. Or if it's a busy climb, you try to beat out the other people that are going to get on it. If you get lost, it really can mess up your trip, your vacation. It has a big impact on it. And it happened enough times that I was just constantly frustrated and complaining. And then, you know, backtracking a little bit, prior to working on Climb On Maps, I worked in academia. I worked in the university setting. A very, very, very stressful job, and I had some illnesses that came upon me for various reasons, stress being one of them. And I needed to take some time off. So I needed to heal. I took some time off. And a lot of that time I spent wondering what's next. And then one day, you know, I mean, Rick, he's been in the mapping industry for over 20 years. And then I was thinking about all the complaining of getting lost in the climbing, and it just sort of hit me. I was like, gosh, Rick, what if we did this? What if we tried to map this stuff? I mean, what do you think?
And I was already in the process of getting a little frustrated with my company and my part of my industry, and just wanted/needed to get away from it. So I was already on the verge of quitting and venturing off into the unknown, rather than actually just jumping from one job to the next. It's like I want to quit, stop, reevaluate, figure out what I want to do and where I want to go. And then Stephanie came to me with that idea, and like, okay, that's sounds like a great plan.
Wow. So is this full time now for you guys?
It is.
More than full time.
It's more than full time, yeah. And it's been, we're entering into our second year. So even though we're just releasing the maps now, we actually took over a year to just do the mapping. Mm-hmm. And we've been living off of our life savings. And the reason we did that, it was several fold. One is, this is a new idea. This is a new concept. We thought, we need to make sure that this is going to work. We're going to test it out. So we started small in Smith Rock State Park. We were living in Oregon at the time. And but then, you know, I said to Rick, I said, there's no way that this will be a viable idea unless we can get the big guys. Mm-hmm. And we also mapped City of Rock in Idaho. And that was sort of a training ground for Joshua Tree. It's kind of like a mini Joshua Tree. But I said, if we can't get Joshua Tree or Red Rocks and do that viably, then this isn't going to fly. So we took the time to map out all the areas first. And then the next stage of it was to digitize all of that information, and that's what, you know, Rick's specialty is with his GIS background, and make sure that we can convey it into something that's useful and understandable and meaningful. So there was sort of two viability steps that we had to go through.
I have to clarify, the digitizing aspect of it is essentially taking the, it's not in the technical term of digitizing, which is typically drawing straight off of satellite imagery. We really need to clarify that we are not drawing off of satellite imagery. We're taking these high resolution GPS tracks and cleaning up the processing and getting it into the GIS software in order to create these maps. So that might be a little bit over technical for the audience, but if anyone recognizes the term digitizing, that would be a red flag for them.
Thank you for clearing that up for us.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
So
there's going to be
one or two. I know you're raising an eyebrow.
There's going to be one or two listeners that are going to be like, excuse me?
for those people, we actually do have a page on our website that's a methodology page.
Good,
that gets into a little more of the nitty-gritty of the process that we use to make the maps. So,
well, sometimes it is good to find out where your information is coming from. So that's great that you have that source. So,
absolutely. And a lot of maps, and especially apps, just pull freely available data available on the internet. And
you said that sounds too easy.
I'm sorry?
And you said that sounds too easy, or...
Oh, it's too easy, but it's not helpful.
It's not entirely accurate. So,
it's not at all.
And before the show, you were telling us how you were linking up in Red Rock with multiple GPS satellites to ensure that this is accurate.
Yeah, the GPS units we use are technically GNSS, which pulls in the satellite constellations from all over the world, every country. Cell phone or smartphone and recreational GPS just pull the American constellation, which is the GPS constellation. So that's a difference between, in reality, when you're out receiving satellites, GPS, you might be getting, 8 or 10 satellites. With GNSS, we pull in 25 satellites easy.
Wow.
Right. So we get in those canyons, you know, you have just this narrow slot right above you where, that's the only sky that you can access. So if there's not a satellite there, you're not going to receive a signal. But when you have this GNSS and these worldwide satellites, you're increasing the number of satellites and the probability of it. So we really strive for accuracy. And then the other thing, I think a lot of people that may not be aware with most maps, for example, your trail maps, they're at really, really large scales, like 1 to 24,000 and 1 to 48,000. But also, they are pulling publicly available trail data off. Well, what we're mapping are rock climbers' trails. These are not publicly available data. So we have actually had to walk every single step that is on our maps. We've estimated now we've walked upwards of 1,800 miles.
You are putting Google Streets to maps to shame right now. By actually walking the rock climbers. Now, one of the questions, too, that some people might have is like, how is this impacting the environment? And I would argue, and I'm sure you will, too, that this is helping save the environment. And you lead to some of that in the front part of the map where it's here's the ethics of things. But this, by following the trails that are there and established, it will help prevent the spider webbing.
We have the standard environmental disclaimers, leave no trace and don't shortcut switchbacks. Mm-hmm. But more than that, on the maps, since we walk these areas, we know where the trails become really braided. We know where you need to bushwhack through a steep, loose slope or steep, loose slopes you want to avoid. So we actually mark that in the map with this red hash area, essentially saying, there might be a trail going through here, but you will be a much happier person if you avoid this area, you know, and we'll show the trails, you know, go around to the right, for example, and avoid this area, go a little bit further, hit the good trail, and you're going to be a much, much happier climber when you get there.
We like to include notes as well as photographs on the maps. So the photos are good for clarifying confusing areas, but we also use the photos to help people navigate the best direction. So if you have a damaged an area that's environmentally damaged or sensitive, there's lots of braided trails, for example, and you can't capture all of those braided trails, we will often show a photograph that says, turn left here. This is the best trail to go to access this area. Do not follow any of the other trails that you might be encountering ahead. Or if you go ahead, then this is your next option to turn in order to access an area. So caring for the environment and helping raise the awareness of the people who are using these maps is definitely a goal.
Well, and I think this map is a game changer. Talk about how it's drilled down, how you take the time to start out at a large image and then each section gets drilled down into quarters or however you describe it.
Yeah, we have several scales, and it starts off with the high overview, which shows the whole area. I'm going to use our Red Rocks map as an example. So we have the whole area, which shows all the canyons, the scenic loop drive, which goes around there, the highways, all the parking areas, the campground, and whatnot. And that, I want to say, is over, 1 to 100,000. Mm. Not used for navigation, but just orientation. And then the next scale down, we go into, say, the Calico area. So it includes half the scenic loop, most of the sport climbing areas. So we drill down into that. And then to kind of give a bigger orientation of that whole area. But then let's say we go into Calico 1, which is the second to lowest level. From there, we show trails. It's still an orientation. We show trails to get from, Red Basin one side to the other side to, avoid the scenic loop closure at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Little tricks like that, mm-hmm. that even locals go, wow, I never knew about that. And then we drill down into the smallest level, which is on a scale about 1 to 2,000. As Stephanie mentioned, compared to typical hiking maps, which are 1 to 24,000.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really detailed, and we extracted vegetation layers from infrared satellite imagery, because in the desert, vegetation is actually an orientation. This isn't Pacific Northwest where everything is vegetation. This is, if you see a tree on the map, you can probably look up and see this tree right next to you. Like, oh, well, this is where I'm supposed to turn.
Yeah, we have noted pine trees. Individual pine trees on the map. It does get down to that level. And I think at the 1 to 2,000 scale, it's really important in these areas, like Red Rocks, Joshua Tree, which is coming out in January, that these areas that tend to be very confusing, and you have lots of small canyons, and if you turn right when you should have turned left, you then get yourself way off, and sometimes potentially in trouble because exposure is a big part of
That's a real issue, yeah.
Of this too. So having that vegetation, we will show a vegetated gully to be able to see, I'm adjacent to this vegetated gully. I don't need to go left here. I need to continue in between these two rocks, which sort of look like blobs of rocks on the map, but they are very clear, distinct.
And this again, it's printed. This isn't a digital thing for now, in other words, so that you can keep it with you. It's tangible, and you don't have to worry about service and that kind of stuff. Something else new that you did, and it was the first time I saw it, just because it's that time of season, I thought of the avalanche blast, where it's gives you the conditions in a circle, or burst, I should say, in a circle where this aspect is this danger and stuff. But you're doing a circle for the climbs that kind of describe what the dangers the difficulty
the type,
and stuff.
Yeah, the type of climb and the difficulty. We call those the crag summaries. So one of the things that can be a challenge with a guidebook, guidebooks are fantastic for giving you individual information about routes. They show you photographs of the walls and the locations of the routes. But when you have a very large guidebook, it can take a long time to flip through and find, what wall is best for you as a climber, for your mood that day. Or let's say you're climbing with a group of people and the majority of them are, say, moderate sport climbers. Well, it can take a long time or be difficult to find the right wall or the right crag to go to. So the crag summaries are these colorful circles that mm-hmm. show in the middle we have a number, and that's the total number of climbs on the wall. And mm-hmm. we actually compile that from the area guidebooks as well as mountain projects. So it's like the most comprehensive summary of the number of climbs. And then we show the distribution of is it a sport climb? Is it a trad climb? How many are top rope climbs? And then the outer circle shows is it an easy climb, 5'9" or below, moderate climbs, 10s and 11s, or hard climbs, we have color-coded as red, 12 and above. So to go back to the example of a group of people, let's say you have a bunch of people who want to climb hard sport and then a bunch of people want to climb moderate sport. You want to look for two walls that are next to each other, one that's red and blue, mm-hmm. and then one that has yellow and blue. So hard sport and moderate sport. And then they can maybe be near each other. And then you can also see the connections between the walls. That's something that's also difficult to get out of a guidebook sometimes, is the relationship between one wall to the next. You could have one wall, for example, stuck in one category area, and then the other wall stuck in another area, and in the guidebook they'll describe two different approaches. But this has happened to us a bunch of times where, you know, we've done the approach as described, and then we look over to our right and we're like, oh crap, we were just there yesterday. We could have just walked over here to get to this away. This yeah. wall. And so yeah. we make that connection now, you know, to yeah. be able to, you can easily see it with yeah. these types of maps.
It's simple and brilliant at the same time. So Stephanie, you mentioned you have an academia background, your PhD. What in that background have you been able to use as far as starting a business and has been helpful in starting Climb On Maps?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think the diversity of the type of work that I did in academia, I mean, I started off in research, but I also had did a lot of work in education. And then I moved into administration. And in administration, you're overseeing budgets, you're managing people, you're managing projects. You need to be able to move things forward and make choices and make decisions. I think I've applied a lot of that to the business. I mean, sort of the division of labor for our business is, you know, Rick is the GIS mapping expert. He spends a long time, you know, to make these, create these maps the way that they are.
They're not hand-drawn like my Ogden Rocks by Brian Meekum back in the 90s.
Not those relics.
No. yeah. So, and then I kind of take care of the rest of the business. And I think the multitasking and the juggling and that skill set I've transferred over. But it's been a huge learning curve, too. I mean, social media, for example, is really an important part of having a business, mm-hmm. and it's been a fun discovery, but it's definitely been a learning curve for me.
Well, and it helps that you have to get out for your job and climb and take awesome pictures in beautiful locations, and so the Instagram handle @ClimbOnMaps is beautiful. Everyone should go follow it. Mm-hmm. So also mm-hmm. I wanted to ask, you know, I guess Red Rocks is the biggest so far and the hardest, the most complicated. Is that correct? Or
that we have mapped?
Yeah.
Complicated.
I would say there's some that in Joshua Tree. Joshua Tree is not out yet. That'll be January. But yeah, considering the mapping's done, I would say they're very comparable.
Okay.
There's a little bit of nuances on each side. Red Rocks is more, I think, more vertical relief, so there's more exposure, there's more ruggedness, there's more soul-crushing moments. But Joshua Tree is more spread out, more harder to find, and they
you have me at soul-crushing. That's good.
It's an actual level of difficulty on their maps.
That's and it. So, that's yes. our hardest level of trail on our maps. Yeah,
it's printing with a little blood.
Yeah.
It's a little blood in the ink.
We had to come up with something, you know, for that. So yeah, we have
describe
the
soul-crushing. Which route was that? Where you just thought, okay, this is a new category.
There wasn't just one. But there's a few descriptions with that. I kind of joke that if you looked at any of our notes in our GPS notes that we've taken in our data collection, the number of times the F word comes up in there is definitely, if I start crying, that's another indication.
Is that marked on the GPS where the crying began?
It does.
The crying is usually followed up with a good luck with that symbol, where it's like red dot dot dot. That didn't have the heart or the strength or something to just keep on going.
That's what I want. I want the director's cut of those maps.
I mean, sort of the description that we put on there on the map with soul crushing is if you read some of the descriptions we wrote, you just want to curl up in the fetal position and not move.
Yeah.
And there's definitely those moments where
and that's before the climb.
That's just trying to find it.
Trying to get there. And I mean, there's many times I really admire a lot of the people who go out in these places and then they put up some of these climbs, and the climbs themselves, like at Red Rocks, for example, these are some huge climbs. I mean, several thousand feet, and they're not easy getting to. And the climb themselves aren't easy, and then getting off of them are difficult. And I really admire anybody. I mean, it's a whole other level, a whole other type of person that is able to do that. And sometimes when I'm on this total respect, I'm on these soul crushing trails, I'm going, who does this?
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know. And we're somewhat hardcore, but I mean, there were those days. I mean, granted, we're also mapping 15 hours a day, and there's a lot of mistakes and errors. We kind of joke that we make the mistakes so that you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go up the wrong way, and that takes a lot of physical strength in order to do that. And then you have then you have to backtrack, and you're like, well, that wasn't it. So then you have to keep going to find, you know, the right way to get there.
Take two. Take three.
Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things that we include on the maps, we also mark exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And we,
I like that.
Indicate, you know, if you fell here, would it be potentially broken bones, major damage, or rest in peace? Those are mm-hmm. our categories. And that was something that I felt was important to include, because that was another thing that really frustrated me. We would go on a climb, and then the walk off of the climb was scarier than the climb itself. I felt like I wasn't warned enough
right.
of what we would be encountering on the way down. And in some ways, that really took away from the experience of the climb. So I feel like we can warn people and let them know what they're in for. You know, Rick mentioned the good luck with that. I mean, we literally do have dot 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 red dot 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 GLWT on there with some of these things. And you know, Rick has actually a much higher tolerance for exposure than I do. And you can see, like on some of these trails, if you look, there's this one trail that he did. I've got some pictures of him also, you know, in these pretty gnarly exposed positions. But this one trail that he did, you look, and there's a death symbol, and then another death symbol, and then another death symbol. And it's like after five times of going through death exposure,
is the climb really worth it at that point?
You know, takes so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is all unroped, because we can. It's
right.
Free sewing is for all intents and purposes, because we can't carry up our full gear, our rack, and all that stuff just to map. I mean, that'd mm-hmm. be. It's exhausting enough doing what we're doing. I mean, there's no way we could do it with, you know, another 40 right. pounds on our back.
I mean, we do have sort of an ultralight setup that we carry with us, some ultralight harnesses, a really small rope. We have our oh shit cams that, mm-hmm. I mean, that's our nickname for them. And there's these cams that have a very wide range. So we can carry the four cams mm-hmm. and they can fit in a lot of different sizes. So We try to protect when we can, but a lot of times Rick and I split up to map. Because we would, these areas are so large, we wouldn't get anything done if we were constantly together. So there's little things that you can do to try to protect yourself when you're soloing, but really you need, in order to gear up and do anything, you need two people.
So where can we buy the maps? Are they available in shops or online only?
A few shops are carrying them, local to the area. The easiest for would probably be through our website, KomaMaps.com, yep. or even through Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, they're through Amazon. We are growing in terms of the number of stores. We have a list of stores on our website. I mean, locally here mm-hmm. in Utah, the Front mm-hmm. Has them. So here in Ogden and then the Salt Lake City, both of those, they have both the Smith Rock map and the Red Rocks map.
What's the response? What are you hearing? What are you hearing from climbers and adventurers that have used these?
It's been really positive. We appreciate it when people reach out and share their experience with us. We have gotten some good insightful feedback that will be helpful to make any subsequent additions, you know, that much better.
Sure, yeah.
But we have a lot of people that say, you know, wow, this really did make it easier for me to find a crag or to a new place that I haven't been to.
We've had several people say that we're charging too little.
Yeah,
that's promising.
Yeah, yeah.
That I think this chat will help a little bit. the amount of work that goes into, you know, something like this makes those, well, priceless. Yeah. But if you have to put a price, that
Yeah. Yeah, pricing. It was. I mean, that's all part of figuring it out as a business. I mean, you have to. The amount of time that we've put into it, it's going to take years for us to make that money back. Mm-hmm. But.
So you're like 25 cents an hour right now or something?
Yeah, probably. That's
negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a long-term commitment and investment. The printing costs are a huge upfront cost for us, and, mm-hmm. and we're printing them on waterproof, tear-proof paper, which is expensive. Mm-hmm. We are printing here in the U.S., mm-hmm. and so that is, I think, probably comparatively more expensive than if right. we shipped it overseas to print. But we feel like having those features are important, particularly the waterproof, tearproof. It needs to yep. be, they need to be able to, a climber needs to be able to throw it in their pack and not worry about it. Or, you know, when they get to the top of a climb, pull it out and be able to use it. And so the printing costs, you know, are a big upfront expense. So that factors into the pricing. But the other things that we have to consider are, how much does a guidebook cost? What are people used to paying for a map? You know, most people sort of have a price tag associated with what they, you know, think a map is worth. Well, the amount of time and energy and effort that it takes to create these maps far exceeds probably your standard trail map.
This is more than a map.
It's way more than a map, yeah. But we have to weigh all of those factors in terms of, because this is a new and unique product, there's nothing like it out there. Mm-hmm. People are bringing their preconceived notions or their preconceived understandings to when we say, oh, we've got a climber's map. All of the things that they understand, they're bringing with them. Mm-hmm. If we asked $50 for a map, I think probably people would not even consider it.
You might have a few extras in your house, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So
the wallpaper.
We need, you know, the maps are a companion to the guidebooks. They're a companion to Mountain Project. Those are the things that give the nice details about the individual climbs. Mm-hmm. But so it needs to be priced in a way that is attractive and affordable to people to say, okay, this is worth it to me, and that's what we're trying to hit.
Is each area, is each map priced differently depending on the size?
It is.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
So, Red Rocks, how much do we know?
It's $24.99.
$24.99. There you go.
And Smith Rock is $14.99.
Okay.
So, it's a little bit different size. We assume Joshua Tree is going to be in the Red Rocks range.
Yeah.
That's going to be very similar size and...
It may be a little bit more. We'll just have to see how it chops up in terms of the number of pages.
And next up is what area?
Well, we're going to get the Joshua Tree out. We have, I mentioned, we've already mapped City of Rocks, mm-hmm. and we need to release that map.
That'll be popular around here, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a little bit of legwork left to do with City of Rocks. We need to recollect some photos. But also, one of the things that's really important for us in the creation of these maps is to work closely with the Park Service. And we have not had the opportunity to do that yet with City of Rocks. Mm. So for all of the other maps that we've produced, we have shared versions of the map with each of the parks. So Smith Rock State Park, the BLM for Red Rocks, as well as the National Park Service for Joshua Tree. And we want the Park Service to give input into, you know, we don't, for example, if there's trails that we have marked and those trails are going to be decommissioned and they really, really don't want people walking on them,
right.
we want to be able to indicate that on the map.
That's
and
smart.
We have X's on the maps for trails that mm-hmm. are like either no good trails or please stay off of these trails.
When we talked to Joshua Tree Park Service, we just happened to come in at a time when they said, yeah, we just, we're in the process of working on a whole trail restoration effort. We're going to decommission these. We're going to shut these down, fence these off, and redirect them here. And they were ecstatic that we wanted to talk to them and kind of mm-hmm. work together with this.
And great timing.
From our perspective, it's like, well, we don't want to put maps or trails on a map. And then 6 months later, they decommission them and people are saying, this does not jive.
Right.
This is not working.
Right.
So it just really fortuitous timing.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't want to send people on a trail that the Park Service is trying to keep people off of either. So that's some of the legwork that we need to do for City of Rocks before we release that. We want to connect with the park there and the local community and get some of their input, you know, into the maps. As far as new areas coming, we collect suggestions from people. We have a couple of places in mind that we're going to explore. Not every place lends itself or needs a map like this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain characteristics of an area that, you know, make having a map like this very useful. And so we want to explore several areas first.
Is something like the swell, is that too grand a scale, or how would you approach something like that type of an area in Utah?
I don't think it's too grand in the sense that we, you know, have the this drill down where we provide the big overview mm-hmm. and then you have the sub areas and then you drill down to it. So we can work with any scale
mm-hmm.
With respect to that. I mean, like Joshua Tree, for example, is huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to have numerous drill down maps, overview maps of different scales in order to sort of guide people where they need to be.
Awesome.
Well, it's just staggering and fascinating, you know, the amount of work that you guys have put into these maps. And so, you know, thank you so much for that. How's the stress level of life one and life two, you know, this sort of new part of your life? Because you're saying that you were, you know, that was something that you were facing with your
previous lives.
This
is good stress versus the bad stress, right?
This is a sort of a new entrepreneurial stress that, you know, that many of us can sort of vouch for a little bit. It's just, you know, a lifestyle. Work is a little different sometimes than the 9-to-5 type of work.
Yeah.
It's definitely different. I'd say the stresses are, the mapping portion is kind of, I don't know how to describe it, kind of somewhat out of touch with reality. So our stress of like, oh gosh, we're in the middle of a soul crushing trail, and you know, like Stephanie mentioned, you know, break down the fetal position, you start crying, and then you kind of, okay, you take a few breaths and you look out and like, well, I'm in a pretty freaking beautiful area. This is not bad.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So the stresses are a little bit different on the mapping front. You know, I do have mental and emotional breakdowns when, you know, my phone's Bluetooth like cuts in and out or something happens, and you know, I just get frustrated and I have to go start over. I need to rewalk a trail. So I
start throwing rocks.
Yeah. I've done that before.
I've got some videotapes of Rick but cussing up a storm here and there.
Yeah, but don't throw the phone. Don't throw the phone. Yeah.
But that's a, I don't know, one way to put it is that's a good kind of stress for me anyway.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that coin is coming back in and doing all the data processing and map development. And that I wouldn't call stressful, except for deadlines. You know, I just shut myself in the office for long periods of time and just hammer through it. So that's a lifestyle difference. But that's the stress-wise, I'm not, I don't feel stressed anymore.
No, I think it, I mean, it's definitely a great positive change from, I mean, when I think about where I was and the type of stressful job that I had before and who I was and what I'm doing now, it's definitely night and day.
Well,
I'm
so
grateful. Mm-hmm. I'd say the hardest stress is financial at this point because mm-hmm. we're brand new. We've used our life savings to, you know, give this a go and see what happens.
So go buy maps.
That would be awesome.
That would help.
We'd love to keep doing it. We'd love to keep mapping. I mean, when you choose to start a business, you choose to take risks.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hope that the risk
And it was calculated.
Off. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. We definitely had plenty of friends and other climbers who have moaned and groaned about the very same things that we did that prompted us to, you know, make the maps. And
and when we're out there actually mapping, whether especially in Red Rocks and Joshua Tree, that, you know, we're out there, hey, you know, what are you doing? We're mapping all the areas. We tell them what we're doing. They're like, oh my God, can I get that now? We've encountered so many people that
we've had to redirect people.
They just kind of, looking around, lost, and we just jump up and, hey, what are you looking for? You know, we've probably already mapped it. We've been there. So we've helped direct a lot of people how to get to the crag that they're going for. So we know there's a need for this. We know there's people out there.
I see that as a future side income is just the helpline. Certain hours available at certain times of the day.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. We can get a helpline. They can send GPS so we know exactly where they are, and we can redirect. That's funny.
Well, actually, the manager of the store in Las Vegas, he was saying he's had people actually call him, the climbing shop in Vegas, which carries the maps, by the way, the Red Rocks maps. He said he's actually had people call him from Red Rocks saying, I'm right here. Can you tell me where where to go? You know, so.
Oh, I love it.
Again, we're talking with Stephanie and Rick from Climb on Maps, and we'll end with this. It's 2017. Why are we printing on paper? Why is this not an app? How come I can't just pull this up on my phone?
Well, I think we'll do a tag team here maybe, and I'm going to let Rick talk about the technicalities of an app.
But one
of my first responses to the paper is that it doesn't run out of batteries.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's not only a wonderful tangibility, you know, to paper. Maybe it's a little bit nostalgic, old school, but there is some
analog.
Analog is a better way to put it.
But there is some very real practicality to having the paper, waterproof, tearproof paper, I'll throw that in there, that with the level of detail that we're getting down to, I mean, you can, with paper and with these maps, I mean, you can open it up, you can spread them out, even with the Red Rocks map, which is individual sheets where you can just pull the one or two sheets that you need. We have on the edges of each page, we say which page is the adjacent page, like a trail that goes off. What mm-hmm. page does that go to? You can spread that out, connect the dots, and you can look at it. I think you can get a much better feel for an area with a paper map in terms of instantly going from a large scale to a small scale and where you are relative to everything else. I think that's something that an app lacks.
Yeah, and to continue with that thought, the crag summaries that we have are, I think one of the benefits of a paper map is you can look left and right and see, well, here's this crag that's going to work for us, this one kind of works for us, this one as well. It's much more difficult to get that to work on a, you know, 4-inch screen.
Sure.
So there's some technical issues with that, or rather design issues that we would have to figure out before going to an app. First, technical issues though, you know, we surveyed this data using high resolution GPS units, which I mentioned, multiple satellites. But yeah, this these units go down to sub-meters, so, you know, 40 centimeters accuracy is not uncommon for our trail data. However, if you're going to look at it through an app, you're using your smartphone, onboard GPS, and that has, you know, anywhere between 10 to 100 feet accuracy. Mm. So
100 feet's quite a ways.
That's a huge difference. Even 10 feet can be a big difference in, you know, when you're talking about your which trail you're on. Well, you could go down this gully and you're going to be, you know, home free. Or if you go down the wrong gully, you're going to get cliffed out. Yeah, I mean, all the way up to 100 meters of or 100 feet of inaccuracy can cause real problems. And a lot of people get, I think they get a little too focused on the dot, like saying, this is where we are.
And they trust that it's accurate. I think a lot of people don't realize the variability in accuracy even with your cell phone. So, I mean, when we're driving on a road and we're using Google Maps, we have, you know, generally good accuracy with the cell phones. But when you start getting into canyons and things like that where that is limited, the average user may not realize that their little red dot is 100 feet off.
Yeah.
And here when we're talking about these scales, that can mean the difference between walking off a cliff or not.
Right.
And with the paper maps and the level of detail that we provide, there's something to be said for learning how to look at the map and then be able to assess your surrounding environment. Here I am relative to the surroundings. The map is showing a tree. The map is showing a gully going to the right. The map
it
is showing...
It makes you think critically about your environment.
It does. And I think some of those features are maybe more difficult to convey in an app format, or if they are conveyable, one of our concerns is that it's going to take up too much memory. So it's not to say that an app isn't in the future. It's a possibility. I think a lot of people have interest in something like that. But there's limitations that we feel like we would want to overcome. And we don't want to create something that might cause more problems for people.
Yeah.
They're following the red dot and they don't recognize that that dot is really 100 feet off of where they should be.
Off a cliff.
Yeah. It could be a problem.
Yeah.
We want to help people, not hurt them.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sold.
Stephanie, Rick, thank you so much for spending some time with us here today. Go to climbonmaps.com and follow along on Instagram. Are you on Facebook too?
We are on Facebook.
On Facebook.
Same.
Climb on apps. So Climb on Maps, not Climb on Apps. Climb on Maps.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. We appreciate
it. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for taking time, you guys. Yeah.